Artam, economic development. Cha, Dharman, religious rituals. Svan, his. Dogdi, enjoy. Buyaha, again and again. Piparti,
performs.
Tan, them. Translation of Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead said, the person who lives in the center of household life derives material benefits by performing religious rituals, and therefore he fulfills his desires for economic development and sense gratification. Again and again, he acts in the same way. That's the Prabhupada's purport. There are two kinds of householders. One is called the Grihamedi, and the other is called Grihastha. The objective of the Grihamedi is sense gratification, and the objective of the Grihastha is self-realization. Here the Lord is speaking about the Grihamedi, or the person who wants to remain in the material world. His activity is to enjoy material benefits by performing religious rituals for economic development, and therefore ultimately satisfying the senses. He does not want anything more. Such a person works very hard throughout his life to become very rich and to eat very nicely and drink. By giving some charity for pious activities, he can go to a higher planetary atmosphere in the heavenly planets in his next life. But he does not want to stop the repetition of birth and death and finish with the concomitant miserable factors of material existence. Such a person is called a Grihamedi. A Grihastha is a person who lives with family, wife, children, and relatives, but has no attachment for them. He prefers to live in family life rather than as a mendicant or sannyasi, but his chief aim is to achieve self-realization or to come to the standard of Krishna consciousness. Here, however, Lord Kapila Dev is speaking about the Grihamedis, who have made their aim the materialistically prosperous life, which they achieve by sacrificial ceremonies, by charities, and good work. They are posted in good positions, and since they know that they are using up their assets of pious activities, they again and again perform activities of sense gratification. It seems strange. It seems like it should be activities of sacrifice. It is said by Prahlad Maharaj, Puna Puna Charvita Charvananam, they prefer to chew the already chewed again and again, they experience the material pangs, even if they are rich and prosperous, but they do not want to give up this kind of life. So, again, the Vedic education, you look at it, it's like a spiral. No? It's not like you learn one thing, then the next, then the next, then the next. No, but you learn the same thing again and again, right? But each time with more depth, different perspectives, like that. So this is, you know, very similar in the second canto, when Sukadeva Goswami starts his instructions to Maharaj Pariksit, he describes the same thing. You know, Prabhupada's purport is very similar like that. You know? And so it's not anything exactly new. Probably most people here already have some idea about this. You know? When I was reading this purport, I was wondering what I was going to say, because everybody here probably already knows what a Grihamedi is and what a Grihastha is, and you know, what am I going to talk about? But I was thinking about it, and generally speaking, in the modern world, if somebody is a Grihamedi, probably is considered a very saintly person, like that, by the modern standard. Somebody who engages in, you know, he gets up early in the morning, he takes care of his face, like that, in the mirror. He uses different kinds of things to make the wrinkles go away, and, you know, shave with his high-class technique of shaving his face. He takes some kind of protein shake, like that, you know. And then he gets in his car and he goes out and fights with the traffic. This is the United States. He's in here. And he has to fight with the traffic, and finally he gets to work maybe like by, maybe 7 o'clock in the morning. He has to get there. Then he works all day long, and he has to work with some neurotic boss who's always harassing him. Unless this is finished in 30 minutes, you're forget it. You're dead meat. You're out of here. He's always working. And Prabhupada says that real wealth means land, cows, and brahmanas, or land, cows, and God. This is wealth, you know. But because they're so far from these things, they cut down all the trees to build more expensive condominiums where people can live, new artificial dwellings. And brahmanas, they don't, you know, even almost no conception of people like this, you know. And then God, you know, and the land, of course, their whole idea is industrial, you know, development of agriculture. In California, where I'm from, they have a very flat valley. It's very big, you know. So they have these big machines, as big as this room. And then they go like for 45 minutes in one direction, plowing or something like that, putting in seeds, everything else, artificial fertilizer, artificial virus control, artificial water, you know. And they come back the opposite direction for 45 minutes. And the people inside are just listening to, music. You know, and almost all of them are intoxicated with it, because what are you going to do? You sit there for 45 minutes and go back and forth, back and forth, back. Yeah. And then when they harvest the things, they have, they industrially, you know, generate a certain kind of tomato that has a certain thick skin, and maybe they have two kinds of tomatoes, that's it, you know? And they look really nice, but they have no flavor whatsoever, it's just like that. And so the machines are tearing these things up from the ground like that, and they pull the whole vine up with the tomatoes, and they go on conveyor belts on both sides. And there's maybe like 25 Mexican ladies there, you know, pulling some tomatoes off like that and putting them in someplace else. And every now and then a snake comes up with things, and everybody jumps back like that. They go back and forth for 45 minutes. You know. So, you know, this is their relationship with the land, you know, and with the animals and everything else like that. You know. And so therefore, all of their endeavors for economic development, you know, getting up in the morning and getting your car, which you don't own, you owe money to the bank, you owe money to the bank for your house, you know, and your wife's not going to be happy with you unless, you know, you don't, also don't own her, she'll leave you unless you're working hard. So everything is like struggling against debt. And you get to work, and then, you know, it's like Hewlett Packard competing with Epson to produce a better printer so people can print better pornography or something like that. It's just so artificial, it's so far away from any real economic basis, that the competition for the money is so intense, where everybody's competing. One devotee, Nandalal Das, from South India, he works for Cisco. There's two Ciscos. One is the computer company, the other one is the food company. And they're the biggest distributor of, institutional food, like that. After them, the next four companies after them combined only equal about one half of their produce. So all throughout the entire United States, they distribute food to like to us, you know, to some big church institution, to a prison, to restaurants. And they, you know, and so somebody will make their order, you know, 500 cans of vegetables, 200 cans of this and that, and all these trucks have to go out every day, you know. He does computer programming. And what he does is that when the trucks, again, are as big as this room, so when these guys are loading the trucks, they have to go into the warehouse. You can imagine how big the warehouse is. It's unbelievable. You know, it's just like, I don't know how many items they have, of canned food, frozen food. One of the items they have, he says, is called pig butts. Right? It's the rear end of pigs, like that. You know? So when he was programming, he put some virus in there, something in there. So whenever you try to order pig butts, it takes you to something else. So at least the time of death, the pigs will, you know, put a good word in for him like that. Yeah. But anyway, when they go in, these guys have these orders in all these places. You have to deliver food to maybe, I don't know, 25 different places, 30 different places driving. And so if you just go around trying to pick the stuff up, it will take forever. So he has a computer program that says, pick up this, pick up this, pick up this, pick up this, you know. Then when they go back to the truck, it says, load it like this, 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 this. And so when they get to their delivery spot, everything is in the right spot to take it down like that. It says it saves at least an hour and a half every day for every person like that, you know. And then if the computer computers crash for one day, it takes them three weeks to make up their profit like that. So their entire profit margin is about 5%. Right? Yeah. All this big endeavor and all the profit they're making, maybe 5% of the whole thing like that is so tight. You know, so much competition for money. And so if somebody makes one mistake, the whole world is like, you know. Another devotee, John Nivas, disciple, and he was in charge of security, you know, he wasn't in charge of it, he was working in the security division for one company. And when people go in the morning, they have this, you know, plastic car, they slide it in, or else you show your thumbprint now on your eyeball, and you go into the company again like that. You know. And so he was, you know, changing the codes every month, and it was like May becoming June. So he made some mistake, and rather than making it June, he made it May again, you know. So he was in California, and so like, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, this beeper starts going on. Wakes up, you know, and people in New York can't get into the company like that, you know, because it's all cookie coated like that, you know. So he's, you know, running out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning, trying to drive down to the company to get in to recode this, and this phone is just going off continuously like that. People are screaming at him, you know, the whole company is locked out, standing outside of the business and being on the walls, you know. So finally he gets in and reprograms the thing, and the computer says, all right, you may enter now. So he was waiting for his boss to talk to him that day, you know, and so on, you know. So this is the, you know, the kind of sacrifice, the kind of rituals that people do now for economic development. You know, the Grihanadi, he does sacrifice for Chandra, Indra, Varuna, Saraswati, the Asuras, and he gets different kinds of results like that. You know, before he starts his education, he does Saraswati Puja. And then education comes very easily. We acquire knowledge easily. You know? But you know, these are the Grihanadis, right? So where are they? You know, they don't exist now. It's very, now we're speaking about something less than Grihanadis. And these are people, Prabhupada says they used to do everything by yantra, no, tantra? Tantra, different rituals. But now they do yantra, they just do gross activities. You know, by my intelligence, I can dominate and conquer the material world.
and achieve economic development by our intelligence. We can conquer the world. Of course, this has a whole history in the development of scientific knowledge in the West. Prabhupada says this whole scientific thing has only been going on for maybe 100 or 200 years like that. And then the Industrial Revolution came, and the scientific process. And at that point, then people said, oh, the world is a machine, and we can manipulate the machine. And we can get what we want to from like that. So we can become the controllers. Even if you look at the fundamental laws of mechanics and Newton's laws, there's embedded a certain philosophical view of reality in his laws of mechanics, which describe how everything works. For every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. You know, force equals mass times acceleration, like that. So one of his basic principles is inertia. Any body in motion will continue with the same momentum unless something interferes with it. So we don't agree with that. The Paramatma is there, right? Making everything work. Without the Paramatma, it doesn't go on automatically. Anybody who deals with reality knows that nothing goes on automatically. Everything requires work like that. Another principle is that any scientific system, you have to isolate the system and then stand back and look at it. So you have to become the unknown knower. Right? Because as soon as the system knows you, then there's a reaction like this. So who is the unknown knower? Yeah, it's usually a position reserved for God. You know? And now we're starting to admit this. Because of Prabhupada, because of our Sankirtan, because of Lord Chaitanya, these ideas are actually entering into the world like that. And they're not just starting to admit that there's no such thing as an unknown knower, and no such thing as a person with a detached, you know, neutral view of things. Everybody has their particular, you know, motivation. And if we know what it is, that's better. Just tell us what your motive is, like that. Yeah. So the Grihamedis are actually very, almost non-existent. To find a Grihamedi, somebody who's, you know, going to church or mosque or temple or, you know, worshiping God for economic development like that. Yeah. And of course, the culmination of all these senses, sense gratification, is sexual relations. Yeah. So the Grihamedi even is following control in his sexual behavior like that. You know, some kind of regulation for his sexual behavior, right? So he can enjoy sense gratification. And progressively, Prabhupada's talking about the Grihamedis, they want to go to the moon, the higher planets. So for that, definitely you have to control your senses. When I was studying karate, black belts, you know, yeah, they talked about, you know, celibacy and these kind of things, and, you know, intoxication, restraining yourself, and only doing certain times, and this and that. So you can really enjoy life. You know, require strength, potency. But now, you know, the whole idea is to have unrestricted sex. I mean, you see that the two greatest inventions of the 20th century were the atomic bomb and the birth control pill. Right? These are the two greatest inventions of the 20th century. The atomic bomb and birth control pills. Now we can destroy people by hundreds and thousands, and we can have sex like rabbits, you know, without any kind of reaction. And of course, beyond that's heterosex, right? No, even that's becoming like something like, you know, it's not the only thing. You know, the 5,000 years ago, when the Bhagavatam was written, you know, there were the Grihamedis who were engaging in some kind of restrained, you know, sexual relations with a wife. You know? When I was reading the Bhagavatam, I think there's only one case that I remember where one woman wanted to have sex and not have a child. Right? All the different cases like that, the purpose of the girl is to have sex, to get a child by this person, this hero, this demigod, this, you know, fairy, Gandharva, like that. But in one case, I think it was a Rakshasi, after she had the baby, she threw it away. And somebody else took it like that, and it took it, you know. Because she didn't want to have sex with a demigod and have a child. She just wanted to enjoy sense gratification. Only one case, right? Everybody else, their idea is, the lady's idea is that sexual relation means to get a child. And it's very natural, very like that. But now it's, you know, it's maybe some idea like that, but a lot of idea that sex is to enjoy yourself, to have sense gratification, and have no fear of pregnancy by taking birth control pills, and, you know, have sex with different men. Like that. It doesn't work out okay, this person, that person. You know? One famous lady poet, she wrote, I've lived with 5 different men. I've been married to 2 of them. I've worn my dresses down to my ankles. I've worn them hiked all the way up to the middle of my thighs. I'm 42 years old. And frankly, my dear, I haven't the slightest idea who I am. Complete confusion, you know. In India, India's better, but in India it's still, you know, it's also advancing like that. You know, maybe we can find green maybes in India. Maybe green maybes come. But after that, okay, then what else? Now we, you know, now we have to have terms for these things, because sex doesn't just mean something. Now we have to have heterosex, right? And homosex, and pederasty, and necrophilia. What else we got? There's a whole range here. You know, bestiality. Yeah. And all these things are going on. Of course, they're not new. If you look at these, they're all Greek words. Not to denigrate the Greek culture, but they're all Greek words, so it's nothing new. Pederasty means sex with a professor, with his children, his students. Necrophilia means, you know, sex with dead bodies. Bestiality, you know. And it's all happening. Of course, homosexuality is, you know, in the United States, it's becoming more and more legal, accepted as a bona fide process like that. There are, of course, I understand that there are studies that whenever you have too much population, there's too many people closer and closer together. Definitely happens in rats. If you give rats some kind of place to live, and maybe a colony cage, the size of the area here with different tunnels and stuff, and give them food and everything else. And of course, they keep increasing the population. But after some time, there starts to be cannibalism. You know, they start to eat their own babies. In the beginning, there's not. Then they start to become catatonic, schizophrenic. They just crawl off in one tube way and just freeze and just starve to death, you know. And homosexuality also increases. So there are studies that apparently homosexuality may be a sane reaction to an insane situation like that. And the public says it's not sane. But if you're stuck in a situation, you're surrounded by so many people, there's so much emotional and psychological conflict and everything else, then your body has this mechanism built in, so you start becoming attracted sexually to the same sex. Then it's automatic population reduction. Mother Nature, key God. There's one big psychiatrist, R.D. Lang, and he wasn't popular with other psychiatrists because he said that usually insanity is a sane reaction to an insane situation. If you see people who are psychotic or neurotic, you see their lives, it's actually, you see, God, the guy deserves to be mad. It's terrible what people live through like that. How horrible the things people go through. And so then what's the thing? You just go mad. You know, you deal with it that way. So this is the modern world. It's, you know, it's what they call it. It's V-karma. And it's becoming V-karma of a more and more abominable kind. Then, if you look at these people's lives, their philosophy, their idea, they, by promise, they accept this. They accept, yeah, you're going to suffer. You're going to have some kind of thing. Well, you know, it's like you just kind of focus on the good aspect and move on like that. This is what happened. This person was killed. That person was murdered. Your husband betrayed you and murdered you. You know, and you killed him. You know, well, you just got to focus on the good aspect and move on. And that's a hero. That's a person who goes ahead. when Papa was in San Francisco, Berkeley, 1975, somebody gave $10,000 in $20 bills. Actually, for Sodom Distribution International, they gave probably $10,000. And probably with inflation, it'd be like $20,000 now. So, it's, you know, it was a nice donation. But it was in $20 bills. I was a treasurer. I hadn't taken second initiation yet. So they said, oh, you know, you have to, the president said, you have to go to Prabhupada's room and help count the money. And I was terrified of Prabhupada, like he was, you know, just gonna, like, you know, we're going to see God or something, you know, death or something. he would look at me and know all the things I'd been doing, spilling Mahaprasad and sitting there in Mahaprasad. He would just burn me to death with his eyes or something like that. You know, I was initiated, probably already had 1,000 disciples or something. Tamal Krishna, Margari Sannyasi, everything. So I went into Prabhupada's room and Nittai was there, Jay Tirtha, Brahmananda, maybe 4 people. And so Prabhupada was just sitting there kind of relaxed behind the table. He was preaching. And everybody else was counting money. So not many people all counting money, these piles of money. He was preaching. So I don't think there was a tape recorder. So maybe one of the few people who knows, you know, knows this. So Prabhupada told this story. And he said, one man, he's working in the mine. And mines are horrible places. It's dark. At any moment you can die. There's water running down. You have special breathing apparatus. And, you know, such a horrible place to work. You know, loud noises. So he was working this mine. And after work, he would visit the tavern in the country and sit outside in the, you know, patio and drink a little bit of country beer, you know, a little alcoholic beer, and read the paper and relax, you know. So one day when Brahman, he came by and he saw him and he said, you're drinking beer, you're going to go to hell. And that was a little frightened. And he said, well, but you know, my father, he also drinks beer like that. He's a miner. It's a very difficult job. And the man says, Brahman says, your father is also going to hell. You know, and the man is more disturbed. He says, but my uncle, my brothers, we all work in this mining industry and it's really miserable thing, and after work we sit and take a little light beer like this, you know. All of us do it, you know. So the Brahmin just, you know, goes away in disgust and he says, your whole family is going to hell. Yeah. So probably the man is thinking about it and he thinks, well, if my whole family will be there, maybe it won't be so bad. And he said, This is the material world. Everybody's looking at everybody else, okay, they're suffering, he's suffering. Well, I guess this is just the way it is. Like that. And he says, then there's no impetus to make any kind of change like that, you know. So most people, Prabhupada, you know, before he left his body, he said, I've been all over the world, I've seen so many people. And he said, most people are good. The majority of people are good. It's just that these leaders are artificially pushing them. You know, who wants to be the president of a third world country? I'm president of a third world country. Right? Everybody wants to be prestigious. We have freeways. We have airlines. You know, we have a skyscraper building. We have electricity. We have birth control. high-tech medical. We have what we call dialysis. You can, you know, destroy your kidneys and go on enjoying to the last moments like that. You know, all these things, we have these things. We are a first world country. But to get this, you have to push the ordinary people, right? To work artificially. They have to be in that automobile at 7 o'clock in the morning, out there on the freeway, pushing. They have to work like, you know, fiends, asses, either in a factory and lose their hand or in a high-tech place where you just drive your mind and body to oblivion. 12 hours a day. It's not uncommon in Silicon Valley. These people, they work from 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock in the evening. And then they have to work on the weekends, maybe one weekend a month. They'll be in the extra time like that. Devotees that work for Bill Gates, Microsoft, it's in Seattle, it's an entire city. It's like he has a whole place, maybe 3 times the size of the Mayapur project, and all the buildings are the same size, same design. From the air, it looks like a microchip. It's like some And it's like, this teacher named Co-Processor Avenue, I don't know, something like that. It's all these stories. And everybody's working in different kinds of projects like that. Microsoft has something like 40,000 employees. The Packard has something like 50,000. You know, IBM has 28,000. They have all these big companies together have a very big land mass. Actually, the physical properties they own are the size of Himachal Pradesh or something. They own like physical property and a lot of money. But, you know, and they have all these beautiful, like, tennis courts and swimming pools and soccer places. So all the employees can, like, you know, enjoy themselves. You know? But the employees say that there's never any time for these things. You know? They work what are called flexi hours, which means you don't have to work, like, from 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You can work whenever you want to, as long as you get the work done. Yeah, but that requires that you work, you know, maybe 50 hours a week, like that. And so they're working continuously. You come home, see your family for a few minutes. What do? You take some kind of intoxication, marijuana or beer, usually. You watch some DVD. You have some sexual gratification with your wife, who encourages you, because otherwise who's going to pay for the bills? And you get up and you go back to work. You know. And sometimes, again, of course, you have a beeper or a pager, which is a cell phone, which is calling you in the car. You're dealing with these things like that. You know, and oh my God, it's a fact. You know. Now, finally, people have cell phones in their bathrooms, right? See, when you're sitting and defecating, it's a fact. Defecating, you're on the phone talking to people about business like that. Oh, God, just try this and that, upload this so and so, call me. I'm sorry, wait a second. I'm not exaggerating. So it's becoming, you know, just insane. And so they finally ask the whole project is finished, the product is shipped. The one devotee, Pandava, he works in the telecommunications division. And now, because it's more expensive for air travel, their division is going up. He has maybe 50 employees that work for him. He's managing all of them. And he said because he's a devotee, he can remain sane like that. He's got a whole plan about how to work for a certain amount of time and get out. He's making it through okay. As a devotee, everybody else becoming alcoholics, Indians becoming alcoholics, becoming divorced, not saving any money. They use it all for cars, movies, expensive hotels, expensive vacations, like that. Yeah. But the same thing, is all this pressure. And they make a, for example, maybe four people want to talk together on the computer at the same time. You have or six, if you have, don't have to fly there, you have a conference by internet. And so beginning it was maybe $5 a minute. And now they had it down to maybe 50 cents a minute. You know, so that's like their competition is howling. Oh, my God. Everyone's going to buy their products. So they have the whole package finished. It's shipped off. It's ready for people to buy it. And then they had a party. You know, they give them like, you know, 5 days off. They all play games together and, you know, you have some recreation for a few days. So they were all there, all this, his people were there together, maybe 50 people, and they were talking, he was congratulating people and going on, you know. And then one guy came in the back, he was just wearing ordinary clothes, didn't have a tie on like that. And he started talking to some of the people and was causing a disturbance, you know. So Pandava said he was just about ready to chastise this guy. And, hey, who are you? This is not your religion, what are you here, you know. And suddenly he realized, it's Bill Gates. he had this reaction, flushed and turned white, because he's about to chastise somebody who's worth, what is it, $2,000 million, right? Would you like $1 million? How would you like $10 million, or $100 million, or $1,000 million, or whatever it is, $2,000 million? So anyway, this is the reality. No time to do any of these things. Suffering, everybody. Yeah. And so then the Grihamedi is probably talking about them. Very rare to find somebody who's... But they are. And where do they exist? In ISKCON. Well, I have one disciple, Laptop Das, my first disciple. He's Punjabi. This was several years ago, but he said many Indian boys, when they join ISKCON, their fixed conception is they come from the village and they join ISKCON, they work hard, and they get some education like that about who am I, how to control the senses, what is life. And they work very hard and eventually become like, you know, manager of the guest house or something. They become a little bit rotund, you know. They work it out, then they go to America. They marry an American girl like that. They get, you know, resident alien visa, everything else. They take care of their wife properly. You know. And then they come back to their village and they buy a new house for their mother. They pay for an automobile and everything else like that. And that's their conception of what ISKCON means, like that. And it's not bad. I mean, it's what's the word? This is like Grihamedi. You know, he wants to do pious activities. He wants to restrain his senses, control himself, so he can live a proper life of dignified, civilized sense gratification. Right? Lord Chaitanya, Raghunath Das Goswami, was running away from home, trying to join the Hare Krishna movement, you know. He kept running away, and his family kept coming and taking him back, you know, like that stuff, you know. So finally, Lord Chaitanya told him, right? He said, don't do this. Don't act like a crazy fellow. You know, you just stay home, enjoy sense gratification in a dignified, civilized fashion, and internally cultivate spiritual life. And when the time is ready, then Krishna will arrange for you to be able to get out of all of this, you know, like that. You know? So there are many people who take shelter of ISKCON to become Grihamedis. Right? And again, in Kali Yuga, this is quite a person in the United States. This is quite a person like that. You know, I got to say, most people, homosexuality is common. Divorce, forget it. Now, what is it, like 40% of all marriages end in divorce? There, and that doesn't count the remarriages like that. Now, the most horrifying thing that we're beginning to discover that most American couples are not having children. Because you can't afford it. Emotionally, you can't handle it. It's divorce. It's not having children. So the birth rate amongst the professional people is dropping like anything. They're not having children. They're controlling themselves with birth control. It's horrible. So Grihamedi is quite a person in the modern world like that. He lives with his wife, he takes care of her, it's a fair deal. Because she's American, I was able to become an American citizen. I don't like her so much, you know, but we get along and okay, we'll live together. It's fair. I can't divorce her or something. It's not fair. You know. And so then, but other than that, the people also in ISKCON, other stories of people that are actually becoming devotees. Can I mention this or not? I guess, okay, yeah. We'll change the names here in the company. One devotee was working for a big computer company, and he would go to work, and actually this is true of many Indians. They go to work, and then they maybe spend like 60% of the time working on the company projects. The other 40%, they work on ISKCON projects, preaching programs for the temple, and this and that. Hewlett Packard is so intelligent. They have a published policy. You see, we know that many of our employees, they want to make photocopies on our equipment for their church, for their social group, club like that. So we accept this is okay, but please try and limit it to this amount each month. Otherwise, it will create economic problems and everything else like that. So you know people are doing this. They're using the company computers, they're using the company scanners, they're using all these things for their projects. So he was spending about maybe only 60% of his actual work time, you know, working for the company, big computer company. Another devotee I know does the same thing. He has the entire Srimad Bhagavatam in Unix. Unix is a computer language. So when his boss walks by and looks at him, what he's doing on his screen, all he sees is his computer code. it's all Srimad Bhagavatam. And the other Indians have found this out, and they're taking copies of this now and starting to like, you know, use it like that. It's kind of like you run your Kasipu and Pralad Mara. So this devotee who was, you know, he was spending, and then his company, very big company, again, one of these 40,000 employee companies, had to reduce because of economic problems. They were going to fire like 5,000 people, and everybody was terrified, you know. So he finished one report, and it was on like marketing, this and that, and he submitted it. And he said it wasn't very good. He just researched it, but again, he was just using 60% of his time, you know. And so then finally, after it was reported in his boss, he said, Arun, I want to talk to you about your report. Come to the office tomorrow at this time. And he's thinking, oh my God, that's it. You know, they're going to give me my walking papers. They're going to fire me. So he came in there, and his boss was there, and his boss's boss was there, and somebody else. And they're saying, Arun, you've been looking at his report, you know. And you know, we're letting people go right now. We're firing them, you know. And so, but this report is so useful to us, so good, that we're going to give you a raise. But don't tell anybody that we're firing people like that, you know. And so the boy said he was standing there. He couldn't believe what he was hearing. He was just standing there like that. Shocked, you know. Kind of looking at him, funny, you know. He shakes his head. Yeah, okay, all right. Thank you, you know. And yeah, I worked very hard on it. we can tell that, and everything else is exact. And he was seeing is this, you know, Mari Krishna Rakhe Krishna. Krishna carries what you need. Krishna arranges. Krishna. You know, he was. You don't have to work like an ass. You know, you don't have to work like a dog. You know? You go to work and you're there every time, 9 to 5. You're working. Everybody's satisfied, getting the work done, and you don't strive to advance up the ladder. You're happy with the income you have, and Krishna makes the arrangement. And Krishna makes the arrangement that you can live quite peacefully. So this is Kali Yuga, right? Homosex, heterosex, necrophilia, okay. You can be agreeable, enjoy life, sense gratification, maybe go to the moon after you die. Or you can actually be a grihastha. Right? You can actually be a grihastha. It's incredible. Incredible. And then what you're trying to be a sannyasi, right? A sannyasi in Kali Yuga, in the current time like that. You know, all of our sannyasis are flying on airplanes like that. What does it say? Somebody, one professor was talking, another professor, he was actually going to our science congress in Bombay in 1984. And the professor couldn't distinguish who was a brahmachari and who was a sannyasi, you know. And he said, well, you can tell the sannyasis because they have Rolex wristwatches, Birkenstock sandals, and Halliburton briefcases. There's a one cartoon, it was in a famous magazine, shows a little man praying, and he says, oh God, I do not desire too much, but I desire that whatever I have should be of good quality. This is our ISKCON sannyas. But it's not new. Gopal Kumar gives a definition of sannyas. And we have Bhagavatamrita as eating good food and not having to work. So many problems, no? So many problems in trying to maintain sannyas, ashram, everything else. You know? But by the mercy of this movement, everything else, we can do all these things. We can actually be grihasthas. And Prabhupada says you can live in grihastha ashram or be sannyasi. Either way, it doesn't matter. I've heard Narottam Das Thakur said, if you chant Hare Krishna, it doesn't matter if you're grihastha or sannyasi. And if you don't chant Hare Krishna, it doesn't matter if you're grihastha or sannyasi. It's my own reading of the Bhagavatam, as far as I can see, it really probably says that vanaprastha is enough. In Kali Yuga, vanaprastha is enough. You know, you don't really have to go complete sannyas ashram like that. It's better, it's more potent, you know, and so you don't go to Indraloka. But in Kali Yuga, you sell the big house, you know, and so this one devotee I'm talking about, he actually retired now. And his boss and everybody else, they can't retire. because they weren't able to conserve money. And they would go home, they'd go to a restaurant, expensive restaurant, expensive vacation. He would go home, have RT with his children, and read the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna book and save the money. He bought an extra house, he's renting that, he would manage that. He had good character and stuff, he could deal with his tenants. So he retired early. You know, all the rest of his bosses and employees are amazed. He maintains their marriage, didn't become involved or anything like that. And now he's a vanaprastha, and we're traveling and preaching. I mean, it's inspiring him to go and tell people about these things. And so we did a program in South America with big businesses, and they were amazed that you can live like this, that you can actually be ethical, not lie, and do everything else. And in the end, you know, retire and be happy and be spiritually elevated. The ambassador of India in Argentina organized a program, and he called the ambassador of India in Chile and told him, this guy's passing through for 2 days. You have to have him give a presentation at your embassy, like that. You know, so he's very enlivened now to talk about how he did it. And beyond that, they built a temple. He got maybe 20 families initiated. Anybody appreciate 20 families became initiated, and about maybe 200 more families, you know, became great ladies, got something out of it, like that. So he didn't conquer the world or anything else yet, but if everybody did that, you know, made 20 initiated families, oh, so nuts. And then so many other people don't drink and, you know, chant 2 rounds a day. One of the boys of one of the great lady families, he's running tennis competitions now. So whenever he wins a trophy, he takes it and puts it on the altar in front of Krishna. He's on the way. So this is my kind of our view of the purport here, that Prabhu is saying there are grihasthas and grihamedis, and the only place to really do this, practically speaking, is within the Sankirtan movement. Other Christian groups also. There are Christian groups also, I know, that also producing nice people like that. You know? But it's gone definitely a very strong process. Any comments, questions?
Yes, I want to thank you for the very enlightening class. I just wanted to make first a preemptive comment, a preemptive meaning that people wondered what you meant by Grihamedi this time. You know, in Gita, when Krishna says, if you cannot practice the rules, the regulations of Bhakti, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. And the purport Prabhupada mentions land, labor, capital, organization, that these kinds of people can provide. And at the end of the purport, the last line, he says, because he echoes the verse, they'll become purified. So my question is, you know, you described the guy that was saving the pigs at one point, the South Indian guy who was including the pig bugs. So, where do you draw the line between right and wrong so that you're actually progressing? Because on one hand, he was doing things a little favor there. And on the other hand, you know, Manasambhika said, he's going to go to hell just like the guy who's cutting his throat and eating the meat. You know, so how do the Grihamedis in this town, which is a legitimate position for a Krishna in that verse, how are they progressing? Because that's the bottom line. We always have to be rising up. So how does it all become progressive and not stuck? And not stuck in you know, in Grihamedi. Grihamedi or Grihasta.
Yeah.
How do you not get stuck?
No, in the Upadeshamrita, text number 10. Karmidya priyata hari priyataya yaktim yajur jnaninas jnani vimukta tegyo jnani vimukta bhakti parama premaikanis kastata. So, Guru Goswami goes through everything. You know, from karmis to jnanis, to liberated jnanis, to sadhana bhaktas, to prema bhaktas, to galoka bhaktas, to gopis, to radha. It's like, and the Prabhupada, in the purport, Prabhupada expands it to be karmis. So everything's there, like that, you know. And, you know, everybody's learning.
Everything's there, everybody's great, but how are they all rising?
Because of Krishna's mercy, you know. This world only exists for us to make progress in spiritual life. It's the only reason Krishna creates it. And this world is non-different you know, than the Paramatma. Advaita Acharya is Paramatma. So everything that's happening here is being controlled by the Paramatma. Right? And so some people are being educated indirectly. Right? You know, they're going around and around and around, beating on the head and this and that and everything else. But it's having an effect on their intelligence, on their heart. You know? If somebody is damned and determined to never go back to God, ever, that at all. And even despite the smell of pious activity or devotional service, he runs. You know? Someone like that, then, you know, he can avoid Krishna's mercy.
So I was also thinking how they might rise faster. I mean, all those people you were describing, they're connected with you.
Yeah.
Those people in the big corporations, the Indian guys.
Yeah.
So you're, by your expert preaching, you're helping them rise.
Well, what about me? I'm very effective with ISKCON. Okay. But yeah, they're different peoples in different levels. Some people have come in contact. Well, Rupa Goswami, what you're talking about, Rupa Shetra, he says there are innumerable living entities in the material world. Innumerable. Some walk, some fly, some swim. Okay. Amongst the walking guys, some have a human body. Okay. Some of those actually follow a civilized process of behavior. They follow Confucius. They follow Socrates. They follow Jesus Christ. They follow, you know, Prophet Muhammad. You know? So throughout the entire world, Krishna has made arrangements that people can begin to follow some kind of karma, right? As opposed to be karma. And then by following karma, then you start to become a jnani. You start to see the results of these things, you know. For the alcoholics, right? You're caught in this syndrome. There's a process, Alcoholics Anonymous, which you can try and take that. For example, they have very simple laws, rules, you know. Jnana. One of the things they teach, alcoholics, one of the phrases they learn in Alcoholics Anonymous is madness, insanity, is doing the same thing, the same way, and expecting a different result. Right? I visit the same people, I do the same thing, and I think I'm not going to fall down into drinking again this time. But listen, try it again. Yeah, that's right. You know, so by following karma, rules of karma, then you start to get some kind of wisdom like that about what is life, who are we, what are men, what are women, what is sense gratification. So Krishna arranges at so many levels like that. And again, there's different levels of civilized life, religious life. And some people think, he said, Vajitana Sesha Bhagavaswami, that the purpose of religion then is to go to heaven. You're not just to enjoy sense gratification in this life and then die, but after this life to also enjoy sense gratification. So then there are rules and regulations and processes for them, like that. You know? And then finally, then some people, they realize, no, the whole purpose is to get out of this place. So then different religions offer salvation, like that. You know, to go and live with God forever. You know? So there's so many different kinds of scriptures and books and knowledge. And people are, you know, if you're just progressing normally, then first you become a vikarmi, you suffer like anything, you become a karmi, then you become a, you know, karmi goes to the higher planets, and you become a jnani, and then bahunam jamanam namte, you start to become a devotee, and muktivadi, like that. But also, there's also spectral mercy. You know, Lord Chaitanya's movement is sublime. Dry ice is frozen carbon dioxide, right? But practically speaking, there's no liquid stage. It goes directly from solid, dry ice, to the gas, like that. So in chemistry, it's called a sublime state change. So Lord Chaitanya takes the most gross people eating, you know, someone's eating Colonel Sanders fried chicken, and drinking beer. Somebody comes along and tries to sell them a book, you know, and the guy, takes it like that. Starts reading it, you know, and someone sells them a nectar of devotion. He used to do this, right? And whenever Mother Yashoda would see baby Krishna, her breasts would flow with milk, and she would like to be looking for weird. But he can't, you know, that's weird, you know. Later on, he looks at it again. Wow, you know, so much reaction, you know? For accepting that. So he can go from being this gross, deep army to being, what's the word, a devotee, and the sadhana and the bhakti, like that, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya.
Jayananda told me,
he said, you know, Hanuman, if I didn't get a little special mercy every day, I couldn't make it. He was Jayananda. So every day, Lord Chaitanya is giving special mercy. And so that, obviously that's part of the process, you know. That's part of the process, no? Is that, you know, the special mercy is there and people can make that advancement. Other than that, if you want to, just by associating with ISKCON or Lutheran Church, other things there, there's a standard process then. If you follow the sadhana by which you progress and you're at different levels like that. Somebody with a B-karma, you start going to church. And he gives up alcohol, you know, by going to church, by following his process.
And his purport, the very next verse, if you can't even work, then in the purport of that verse, you know, try to be self-situated. Prabhupada echoes what you're saying by saying people, just by being a little self-sacrificing, they will someday come to the realization that sacrificing or everything is the ultimate sacrifice. So Prabhupada encourages what you're saying.
Yeah, he says, don't be a complete jerk. At least give something to somebody for some purpose. Like that. And it says here they give a little sacrifice and they. So Krishna is so kind, it's a progressive process. Is there any final comments? Okay, so Papa the key. Bring Betty Ashram the key. So if anybody has any questions, come up afterwards, we can discuss them in detail, I guess.
Questions from the
internet. Okay, internet. All right. So okay, you can go now, but for all those on the internet, making Maharaj the wonderful class and making us aware of our situation in this world. As you said, Maharaj, working more than 14 hours is the mandatory working hours every day. What we have to do to maintain our Krishna consciousness being an association of people who are completely focused on sense gratification, many times it seems impossible for any progress in Krishna consciousness. How to keep going with an impetus to serve the instructions of Gurudev. Okay, from Mumbai. You follow the process. You have to, basically, I boil it down to, I think somebody asked me, after all these years in Krishna consciousness, what is the whole thing in essence? I think it's 8 words. Get up early and get your rounds done. So, but I, myself, I get up at 2 o'clock, okay. 1:54, the alarm goes off, and half the time, if it was within reach, I hit the snooze button. But it's not. I put it across the room by the light, I make a clear pathway, the alarm goes off, and I stagger across. In my operating system, I have this, in the boot sector, this program, you cannot turn off the alarm until the light is on. So I put the light on. There's a glass of water right there. I don't want to drink it. Break it. Oh, God. And your body, when it's hydrated, you feel good. Otherwise, you feel bad, you want to sleep. So then, of course, go wash your hands, everything else. Sit down. Don't lie down. Sit down. And barely, within just maybe a few minutes, you feel okay, you're chanting and stuff like that. And this is my tantra. And I still have to use it. So. And it's a fact, when you get up and get your rounds done, and your whole intelligence is clear, everything else, and then automatically then you can adjust the process so that at work, you find a few other people who have interest, and you start associating with them, and sometimes you quit the job. This job, this is, Krishna will protect me. I'll quit this job and get a better job. Like that, where you can be a devotee. Like that. Okay. Baba Ki. Baba Sarki. Radharani Ki.